Welcome to the Plastic Please Me Store podcast.
We are your hosts, Trey the Explainer.
And me, Miles Greb.
A podcast about the natural world.
Things that people claim are part of the natural world.
And things that used to be.
Trey, do you remember some of those early videos on YouTube where you just see like some super grainy thing and like something like kind of moves a little bit to the left or like maybe there's a flash of light? They're like, look, that's an eye.
Yes, I love those videos. I know, like, have you seen the Argentina gnome video?
I haven't, but I hope to soon.
That's a classic. It's a classic one. It has like a, there. It's in Argentina. They see across the street and there's like a garden gnome, a little garden gnome on the other side. He's in silhouette. He's like all blurry and he starts walking and then the video ends because it's like 4 seconds long.
I think the best of these videos is probably the Fresno Walker video.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, there's the mammoth in Siberia.
The one, it's in the river, right?
Yeah, the river mammoth, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And, steals these and make great thumbnails, you know?
I'm trying to think what other one. There's like, you're right that there was a whole like period of internet history where there were like thousands of these and they're all kind of memorable.
Yeah, because we used to have those books, right? The Osborne books with like of cryptids and UFOs and stuff with the big colorful illustrations. But the next generation, they got these YouTube videos and these bad images that went around with copypastas, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm here to tell you, Trey, that even if you become the president of an esteemed country like Mexico, you can still love this stuff. You don't have to give it up.
Really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, because great. AMLO, as they call him down there, the president of Mexico, he recently shared one of these images. It's a little elf-looking dude, black and white, in a tree. If you haven't seen this image, you can easily look it up while listening. It is apparently an Eluche, a elvish, bright leprechaun-type creature that's common in Maya mythology and folklore. And he's just hiding up there in the tree. Are you looking at this picture right now, Trey? What do you think of it?
I'm looking at it. How did he share it? He shared it on his Twitter account, like Trump?
Presidents of major countries just tweet stuff now.
I don't like that. Yeah, I kind of don't like that it's a thing.
Yeah, basically they just like sit around and shitpost. That's what our leaders do now in the world.
I'm looking at it. It's how do you get photos this blurry in 2023?
Well, mystical things are hard to get in focus, you know.
I'm seeing it. It looks like he's wearing a hood and he's got glowing yellow eyes. He's in a tree.
He looks a little like the Flatwood Monster, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he does. He does.
And I might say it is the Flatwood Monster, and we should really look into this.
He fled West Virginia. He was like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, so the president wrote, I shared two photos of our supervisor of the Mayan train works, one taken by an engineer 3 days ago, apparently, of this creature. I will point out that this video, this image appears to have shown up in 2021. So it's a year plus old. So I don't think this 3 days ago part of the story is correct, unless the exact same photo was taken again. Which that would be interesting because then we were getting repeat sightings in the same spot with the same camera. So that's kind of cool. That makes it more testable. So
I'm looking at the tweet and it has that context, that good like fact check thing.
Yeah.
Under there it says, yeah, it's at least 2 years old. Yeah, that is quite a killer right there. So he said it's the supervisor of the supervision, the Mayan train works. So it's supposedly from like a train supervisor.
So like what is this thing? Well, it looks like it's like more of a cryptid now that we're taking pictures of it in modern times. But actually, it's a creature that dates back in Maya culture quite a ways. They are actually extremely similar to a lot of Celtic legends, like leprechauns and stuff. And I'm not the only person to notice the similarity. Even some of the Mexican sources that I was reading today, they point this out as well. A few even had like interesting theories about how that happened and maybe there's some cross-pollinization there, but I have no idea if that's true. It seemed like a speculation on their point, but they are pretty similar to a lot of Celtic traditions. Basically these guys, right, they're called the Eluche. or the Chacaniqua, which is what a different ethnic group calls them down there. But I don't know how to pronounce that right. I listened to it three times, so forgive me. But so we'll just go with the Aleutian. They're small forest spirit, like little creatures. They're about knee high, right? So like they're kind of like a pixie or a sprite. They normally can't be seen unless they have a good cause to speak to humans or they're tasked by humans in some way.
And interesting.
Yeah, you'll often see them like, you know, hiding behind rocks or like just behind vegetation and stuff like that. And this tradition mainly comes from the Yucatan Peninsula. So it is said that these things can be created, right? So you get a Maya shaman or a priest, and they have a special ritual, and they like have one of them carved out of clay. We have some of these like carvings, by the way, traditionally. I guess they're ones that they didn't turn into real creatures that are left over. But we have depictions of them. You get one of these made out of clay, you do a ceremony over it, and then you can take it somewhere, and you can make it like protect your land. And you can set up a system where it like protects your land for 7 years. Yeah. And after
specifically
that,
7 years, and then
7 years. And after that, you're supposed to let it go. But if, and they'll do things like protect your land from like poachers. One rural, Maya man, who was interviewed said that like, if someone tries to take a deer or some of your crops, the creature will give people a headache or give them diarrhea. Basically puts little hexes on people, you know. So
interesting. So it's like, it sounds like it's like a golem a little bit. Like
it is.
Like
it is a little bit like a golem, but there's kind of they're also kind of like nymphs or sprites, you know, like of the land. And the rural farmer who was interviewed also mentioned, you know, if you're done with it guarding your land, if you don't want it there, you can go kill the thing. And he recommends the best. Yeah, I don't know why he started talking about this. Really, I was like, well, why would we want to do that? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But he's had cause to kill them before, and this is what he said. I'm not saying this. He said, you can get some flour, specific flour, mix it with honey, and give it a drink, and it will give the little creature diarrhea. A lot of this is diarrhea related.
Apparently. Why is it diarrhea related?
I'm not making this up. And you can follow the diarrhea trail. Because otherwise they might be invisible, and then you can knock it out and hit it with a rock.
Wow.
So, yeah. One way to talk to them or to like make peace with them is you make this cornmeal type of drink and you put it out in three separate bowls as an offering. And the Aleutian, they're also prone to wood knocking and throwing rocks.
The Bigfoot people will love that.
Yeah, I thought the wood knocking was interesting because the Sasquatch phenomenon is they're said to have wood knock, and they record all these wood knocks all the time. So.
There's a Mexican Sasquatch right there. That's a subspecies, Miles. That's a little subspecies of the Texas Bigfoot.
Littlefoots. But that's copyrighted because of Land Before Time, so I don't know.
Really? Seriously? Oh, shoot.
Come, Sarah. Three horns never play with long necks.
Littlefoot. Three horns never play with long necks.
Yeah. Belief in these creatures to some extent is still present in Mexico over the past several decades. There was an important bridge that was to be built over a popular highway, and this connects like a major tourist airport. So it was an important bridge. It kept messing up and having problems, right? Mm-hmm. And then one priest was like, yo, that's because your Aleutian are mad. You haven't asked them to protect this land. You know, you haven't asked them to build their land. They're protecting it. So they went and built like a little Aleutian home to like appease the guy. And okay. I assume gave him some of this corn drink. It wasn't in the story, but I'm just going to assume because he's probably thirsty. And then they built a bridge and it worked just fine.
All right. It's like the reverse Mothman almost, too.
Yeah. And then there was a giant Elton John concert near some of the more impressive Maya relics and like their temples and stuff, you know?
Are you serious? Like an actual Elton John? Like legit?
Our glorious city was built by the divinity.
They built a really fancy big stage there, and they had it collapse. And then a lot of people on social media and even newspapers are talking about how the Alush did this because they were not appeased beforehand. And so other shows, other concerts for big artists that have built stages in that area have hired these Maya priests to, you know, appease the Alush beforehand.
I'm looking. I'm seeing it. They literally, like, there's little Alush, like, pyramid in houses built under highways to appease them.
Yeah, they
built
the little shrines. Nice. Mm-hmm. And there's been some, like, bus fires and stuff, you know, where, like, public buses catch a fire, break at really untimely moments. And those have been blamed on the Alush by newspapers since the 70s. There's a lot of articles about this.
So they're like gremlins, too.
Yeah, it reminds me of gremlins, which, aside from being a fantastic duology that really needs a third movie, were creatures that World War II fighter pilots and stuff thought were messing up with their planes and tanks.
Right. They're getting the machine.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Whoa.
Obviously, some people actually believe in these creatures. I asked my buddy who lives in Mexico about it, and he's like, people down here will believe anything, man. So that's what he told me. you know, I've never been to Mexico myself, but he was not surprised about the tweet. He personally said, like, he knows that his family voted for this man, and he's like a moderate liberal, and he has some policies they like and some they don't. I don't know if the guy is as crazy as some other world leaders famous for their tweets, but it is definitely interesting to see a world leader of a very prominent country tweet these kind of, like, you know, mid-aughts kind of cryptid photos, right?
Yeah, I just saw, it's just, like, so random, like, for, like, a president, like, a world leader just to do that. Like, if Joe Biden just posted a picture of a Sasquatch or something.
We did have Jimmy Carter say he saw a UFO.
A young politician is leaving a fundraising event in Georgia when he spots a large, eerie object glowing in the evening sky.
When he looks up in the sky and he sees an object, it's an object that is big. It's bigger than the moon. And he thinks to himself, that's the darndest thing I ever saw.
There is no reasonable explanation for the strange object he is seeing in the sky. It truly is something he can't identify.
That's right.
Yeah. I asked my buddy, not that this is, like, the only sourcer, he knows everything Mexican politics, but I mentioned it. Is this, like, a political motivated? Is this a symbol of any, like, group? Does this mean anything, like, ethnically and politically? And he said, not really. There's just, you know, a lot of people, some normally more rural, who actually do believe in these. And sometimes it's just kind of part of the culture and fun to some people. But there are people that do believe in these things. And he thinks that the Mexican president is tweeting it because he, you know, was like, whoa, look at this. Like a 12-year-old.
So. I like that. I like that. I would vote for this president just based on this alone. Well, you
know, like, I'm a one-issue voter. How much cryptid shitposting do you do?
Like, I relate to this. Like, if a world leader believes, like, is having a fun time with blurry cryptid photos, I'm like, I get you. I feel that.
It's just such a bad, like, bit of
forget kissing too. Babies. Forget politicians kissing babies. Let's just post, like, weird, like, Jake the Alligator Man pictures and stuff like that.
in other cryptid news, famous cryptid debunker Joe Nickel, who's also been on Monster Quest a few times, recently went on the popular cryptid show Monster Talk and debuted his findings about the Dover Demon, which he's been working on for quite a while. And can you guess what his findings on the Dover Demon were?
I'm assuming it's an owl.
Yeah, it was an owl. And ironically, when I look at this, I'm like, if that is anything, I bet you it is an owl when I look at this Alush photo.
Yeah, let me see the photo. It does look like an owl. Or, like, they have monkeys and stuff. It could be, like, a monkey.
Could be nothing, man.
Or could just be, like, a edited photo, like some of those people on Twitter make, of where they just, like, draw, like, a creature in it.
You actually think people would do that?
Maybe.
They just go on the internet and make stuff up?
I don't know. It is a little unrealistic, I know. Right. This makes me wonder, like, so there's people that believe in, like, old traditional like Maya spirits and stuff. The Aztecs like had a cryptid, like I guess it's like a cryptid. It's more like a fantasy creature. It was like the Night Walker or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it sounds metal as hell. It's like a 10-foot tall, headless, like naked man with his like rib cage split open, like the thing. Oh, and it walks damn. Around at night. I think it's called like the Night Walker or the Night Demon or something like that.
I don't like it. Kill it.
Let's take a look at the last one, everybody. Nightman. Don't know what that is. Just don't know what it is.
What is happening?
Pretty strange answers today.
I wonder if there's people that believe in it, like as a real creature. Nightwalker?
Yeah, I don't know. And like, it's important to say that oftentimes, especially in the West, we talk about the Mayans as a completely gone civilization, but the Maya people are still there, and they still have their own culture and traditions. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. That's a crazy story. And he just did it unannounced. Like he was just like,
yeah. As far as I can tell, and you know, I am reading some of the sites on Google Translate because they're in Spanish. But as far as I can tell, nothing prompted this, and it's not connected to any particular political movement. It's just basically this guy's like, "Wow, we did it. We got to capture this. We got to picture this dude." And he's like, "Check it out, everyone!" Like it didn't fit it at all. So
yeah, like his advisors didn't stop him or anything like that.
So yeah, that happened.
Here's the spooky Aztec creature right here.
Let me look. Oh, Trey, don't show me that weird. Look at that guy. That guy's like, nope.
That guy's running away. He's like, holy shit.
Scary little monster man.
Fighter of the night, man.
I think it's like, I have to look more into it. Like, I think the reason his like rib cage is open is because like his heart was taken out or something like that.
I hate it when that happens, man.
So yeah, that's the. So I wonder. I want to hear more about like Mexican cryptids. I should ask Raphael next time I talk to him.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get somebody who understands that culture a bit. Because I obviously, you know, I'm doing my best, but I'm an outsider to this stuff. So I might have got a few little nuances wrong, but I tried my best because it was a interesting thing that a world leader tweeted a cryptid. So we had to talk about it. So
right. Like I remember, like I like that time where we had Kozman on and he talked about like Turkish cryptids and weird stuff.
Yeah,
and it's like definitely. We never hear about it because it's, you know, another country.
Yeah. But I didn't have time to read a book about it because it happened like last night. So
this is breaking news.
This is breaking cryptid news, okay? You don't get this from other shows.
I didn't know about like Elton John concerts.
Oh yeah.
And stuff being blamed. That's crazy. That's crazy that like they actually invest in like infrastructure to appease the spirit. Like that's interesting.
That makes sense to me.
Do we have like an equivalent of that in the US? Like, we have religious people, I guess.
Well, sure. I mean, like, look, Catholics, they do stuff. We have exorcisms.
That's true. It's true.
Sing the Pledge of Allegiance all the time.
Sing the Pledge of Allegiance. It is, yeah, that is a spooky, like, religious oath, like, thing. It is creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you think this is fake, Miles? You think this is a staged photo or?
Yeah, I think this is a black and white, blurry, nonsensical photo that looks weird if you're told to think it looks weird and doesn't really look like anything. And because the Aleutian, I believe, are invisible unless they're tasking you or they have some other business with humans. So I don't believe you could take a photo of them. So, of course, it's not real.
Give the president the shits.
Yeah, he doesn't understand mythology, apparently.
If you were a president, could you? All right, Miles, you're like the U.S. president. Could you what movie was that where they talk about like the president's book? It has every answer in it. I think that was what's the movie with Nick Cage? National Treasure.
Yeah,
there's a scene. It's like the president's book contains all the valuable information about entire U.S. history and all the mysteries and stuff. If I was president, I want to know if Bigfoot's real or something like that. Aliens are real.
Well, Jefferson would have written in that book, right? And Jefferson would have believed in Bigfoot for sure.
Yeah. Did he write about Bigfoot at all? I don't think
so. No, he didn't exist at the time, but he did write about, he did send Lewis and Clark out specifically to look for giant monsters.
That's true. Because when he was excavating, he excavated like mounds and stuff, and he found like mastodon bones and didn't really
understand
what they were.
Put together wrong and made them look like a big doofus monster.
Like a kaiju?
Yeah, a little bit.
Colonial era kaiju.
Because he had a feud with a French zoologist who said that North American animals were like weak and small and diminutive, just like the American people, because we all lived in a swamp.
And
Jefferson's like, we got big ass, badass motherfuckers over here.
That guy was like,
I'm going to prove it to you, Frenchie. Yep. Oddly enough, he didn't show him grizzly bears in his reports back, which makes no sense to me. Because, like, look at a fucking grizzly bear, man.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, anyways, Trey.
Yes.
So there is one badass in history who is badder than a bear or a mastodon or an Aloosh, who was real.
Yes. His name was Alexander the Great or whatever. he was now that you say that, yeah, he was a bit of a machine. Like, if you go through all the like injuries he like survived, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And like, I want to point out, he got pierced
in like the chest and lung and stuff, and
he did all the shit he did before cocaine existed.
Wasn't on drugs? What type of drugs?
I don't know, but he wasn't on coke.
He was an alcoholic. We know he was an alcoholic.
Well, that's I mean, you ain't taking over the world, you know, and colonizing without alcohol, man. You need it.
Like Alexander the Great, like, legit was an alcoholic. Like, he killed one of his best friends when he was drunk, just in anger.
It happens, man.
It happens. Yeah. You know. Yeah. He was talking shit. He really was talking shit. He was talking shit. Clytus the Black. Yeah, screw that guy.
Clytus the Black out, dead.
It was weird. It's crazy. There was a Clytus the Black and there was a Clytus the White. They had to differentiate him on color for some reason.
Yeah.
Like Gandalf the White, Gandalf the Gray.
I know about the Lord of the Rings. Anyways, Trey.
Yes.
We're a little off topic. We're talking about Alexander the Great. I tried to set you up.
Yes, and I ruined it. I totally ruined it.
Yeah.
You kind of helped give me this story. You sent me a story this month, last month, something like that, that they found Alexander the Great's tomb.
Oh, my God. That's one of, like, the holy grails of our archaeology. People have been looking for that for centuries, right?
It's like saying that you found the Ark of the Covenant and stuff. It's equivalent to that. It's like the non-religious version of, like, finding Noah's Ark or something.
So who was Alexander the Great? I mean, people know he ran around, he did the gay, he fought, he beautiful young man. People know these things. He got a horse, but like tell us the story in a couple minutes of Alexander the Great, Trey. Like, what was he about?
Miles, you're really setting me up here. I could talk on and on. He was a guy that had a dad. He's a kind of a nepotism
baby.
He was
a guy who had a dad.
he was a nepo baby because his dad was really great. His dad was a great conqueror too. And he basically conquered all of Greece, but got really fucked up. Like, he lost an eye. He like fucked up his leg and stuff.
He didn't need that eye.
I know. Well, yeah, Philip, he lost that eye.
Odin didn't have an eye. He don't need an eye. Fuck it.
I think like a crossbow bolt went right through the eye or something like that. It was a crossbow. They didn't have crossbow. It was like a ballista or something. I don't know. I have to look back at it.
A ballista is huge.
It was something. What was it? A javelin? I don't know. I forgot how Philip II lost his eye. People are going to be on my ass about this if I don't figure this out. Anyways, that was Alexander the Great's dad, and he got assassinated. He got stabbed. In a public theater, and Alexander the Great became king at 20, I think 20 years old. He was very young. And like, his dad had been preparing for an invasion of Persia and was all ready. And then he died. And then Alexander the Great kind of inherited all his dad's work. He crossed over into Asia, beat, the Persian king Darius, like Xerxes. Twice, not Xerxes. Yeah. It was Xerxes. Like, what is he to Xerxes? Xerxes, like, great grandson or something like that.
Because I thought the only history existed was in like 300. So,
there. Let's see. What is Darius to Xerxes? Like, he's a descendant. Like, he's a direct descendant. So because like there's a 300 sequel or something like that, and it's like what is it called? It's called
301.
No, it was called something crazy like Leonidas's Revenge, and it's like Alexander the Great avenging Leonidas by killing.
It is Alexander. I was just kind of kidding about that. I didn't know that. I mean, I've read the comic 300. I've watched the movie. I like the movie other than the homophobia bit, but yeah. Which is just like, it's just stupid, that part. Like, just why did that have to be in there? But I was just teasing, but it's funny that it's actually Alexander, the second movie. So I kind of want to watch it now.
Xerxes is his great-great-grandfather or something like that. Okay. So Alexander the Great defeats him twice and basically takes over his whole empire, but doesn't actually get to kill Darius. Darius gets killed by one of his vassals.
Yeah, Grimer Wormtongued.
He literally did. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And then Alexander the Great made it his personal mission to kill that guy. He's like, oh, you killed him? I'm going to kill you now.
Yeah, transitive property. I just invented it.
Because the guy, what was his name? His name was Bessus. Bessus mm-hmm. was like, I'm going to kill Darius. Aren't we going to be friends now? Look, I killed your enemy for you. And he's like, no, you're my enemy now. And he killed you. So he hunted him down.
Badass, though.
He crucified him with a tree or something like that. Like by splitting a tree in two. Or something like I think it was two trees, and then like the trees, like they heal up eventually or something. It was a fucked up way to die. And then then Alexander the Great was like, all right, I'm going to go all the way to India and conquer some of India. And then his troops were like, it's too far. We want to go home. It's been like 10 years. And then he went back.
There's like five or six Alexandrias like in between India and Persia. Right.
Yes. Yeah. He founded tons of cities in between. One was named after his dog. Another one was named after his horse. And then several named after himself, including Alexandria, the famous one that's in Egypt.
Yeah, okay, so there's like seven Alexandrias.
There's seven of them. There's Alexandria, like the furthest, Alexandria and Bactria. There's a lot of them. And then so eventually he like reluctantly went back to Babylon, like the center of his empire, and then died of a broken heart.
Is his last word thing true?
The thing where he's like to the strongest.
Yeah. So in the story, Alexander's in his bed, right? And all of his men and his bros, they're all around him, and the other generals all vying for his power because he has the most powerful empire in the world right now, right? And there's no heir. And so he's in bed. And everyone's like, Alexander, like you gotta tell us, man, who's gonna be the king? Who's gonna do it? Like there'll be civil war and there'll be fighting if you don't tell us. And he just, he just doesn't want to say, you know. He just holds up his hand and he just goes, to the strongest.
To the strongest.
Eyes. And like, he, you know, like 80% of them are like, that was badass, bro. And
the other, they're like, that's going to cause problems, but that was pretty badass.
And the other 20% are like, fuck, this is not going to be good. This is going to be bad.
There's debate. There's actually like debate. So interestingly, the words in Greek to the strongest are similar to, it's like Kratistos or something like that. It sounds similar to Krateros, which was his one of his second in commands. So some people debate he was actually trying to say to Krateros, like to his like second in command is going to get the rule, but they misheard him as to the strongest because the Greek sounded so similar. And then other ones say he said nothing, like he was just so far gone at that point because he got a fever. Probably from drinking bad water, and then died. And he fell into a coma.
Literally, could have saved him with penicillin.
Yeah, no. Alexander the Great probably could. Like Alexander the Great he was pretty fucked up towards the end. Like he was pretty injured. Like when he got the cross, the arrow in India, in like the lung. He probably, like, there's a lot of debate on if he could even fight after that. Like, he could still stand on a horse or sit on a horse and stuff, but it's debatable if he could fight because he really didn't have too much action after that. Like, I think he only had, like, one last, like, battle, and it was kind of, like, one-sided. There's a lot of alternate history stuff. Like, oh, if Alexander the Great survived, like, would he go on to conquer more? Would he just, like, be bad at it? Because he was undefeated. He was undefeated in the field. But then he dies and almost immediately there's fighting because there's no heir and stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
And his body famously doesn't smell like it smells good. Like it doesn't rot right away, even though it's like summer in Babylon. So that's given rise to theories like, oh, was he actually dead? Or was he just like, his pulse was so faint that they couldn't really feel it?
Or is that propaganda?
Or is that propaganda? Yeah, exactly. Like, everything's all messy because there's so many, there's just like a couple sources that are all like in disagreement. So his like the succession crisis is a little freaky where it was, they tried to figure out who the empire was going to go to. His half brother, who was mentally challenged, his name was Eridius, or his unborn son with Roxana, who eventually became Alexander the Fourth. And it was like, who does it pass to? Which of these two? And eventually they settled on a mutual one. Like, they share the rulership with like a regent, and it was just very messy.
It was so bad.
And the fact that both of the claimants, one was mentally challenged, like Eridius was supposedly like it sounds like he, I don't know, like that, like it's ancient times, so they didn't really have like formal classifications for it. But he was like not able to really make informed decisions. And then the son who's unborn, which was like a baby for a long time. So like, oh, you can't have the, like, those are bad kings. They're not going to be able to rule. So a lot of it fell to like the generals who were in charge. And right away his body became important, his dead body. And so people, like, so the regent was Perdiccas, who was like the second in command, or third in command, whatever you want to say. And he was going to, he had plans to take the body to Macedonia and Greece for a burial. But a little sneaky guy named Ptolemy stole the body on an en route and brought it to the city of Alexandria and built a tomb. And this started a whole war because this was like insubordination, him stealing the body.
Well, sure. And, you know, like Alexander at this point was like a godlike figure, you know, he's like a massive cultural figure. So.
Oh yeah, and like the holding the body was seen as like luck and stuff.
Yeah,
in Macedonian culture too, like it was a big deal that like the successor buried the predecessor. So like if you were able to entomb the previous king, that kind of meant that you were the valid king. So Ptolemy stealing the body was almost like him declaring himself king. Not quite, but it was pretty serious. And he stole it like en route, and Perdiccas was really, really furious about that, and like invaded Egypt because Ptolemy was just like a satrap, like a local governor at that point.
Yeah.
But Perdiccas's invasion of Egypt went terrible. His army got eaten by crocodiles, and everything went bad. And eventually, they killed Perdiccas, and so Ptolemy got to keep the body.
Okay.
And so he built. So his capital was the city of Alexandria, the most famous one. And it was, and he built
the leftmost one, right?
I guess it's the leftmost one. Yeah, it's on like the sea. It was on the ocean, and they built like harbors. A lot of people know it for the lighthouse of Alexandria, which came later,
which is great in Civilization, and it lets you get a free civic. It's very good.
You don't need fascism to build it or whatever. What's the? It's like the Mount Rushmore or whatever. Have you seen that?
I don't think you need fascism to build Mount Rushmore. Maybe it's a newer one.
I saw a meme about it.
I don't think it's actually true.
Oh, boo. Internet lying.
I'm sorry. Yeah, those bastards don't do that.
So Ptolemy builds the Soma, the body. That's what it was called. Yeah. It's a big, huge building, very opulent tomb, where he put Alexander's mummified corpse because it was like, there's a lot of weird stuff. Like it was preserved in honey and stuff.
I guess it wouldn't spoil much in honey.
Yeah, that was the idea. Like during transportation, it was kept in honey, and the sarcophagus was like. Later, you hear about this that the sarcophagus that he was put in was glass, which is crazy because they had glass, they had blown glass and stuff, but like they didn't really have like glass windows, like long, large panes and stuff. So the sarcophagus, if it existed, it was like the most complex. And like largest and craziest like piece of blown glass in like the ancient world.
So there's like, people who claim to have this sarcophagus. Is this maybe not real?
So there's people that claim, so it gets a little messy. Like there was a temporary sarcophagus that was like an Egyptian pharaoh's.
Okay.
And I think that's been recovered. I think that was like recovered by like Napoleon or something like that. And so that was like the temporary sarcophagus, but like the glass one, I think is just completely missing.
I see. Because it's glass.
Like we have Roman glass that survives and stuff, but yeah, most it would shatter really easily. So Ptolemy builds the Soma, the tomb, and basically the city like grows up behind it, like around it, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Because like it was like one of the foundational buildings of like the city. And as Alexandria became like more and more, like it became one of the highest populated cities in the ancient world. It was like basically like the Paris of the ancient
sure,
world.
Sure, yeah.
And it was very fancy, and it was a huge port and hub. And
at least in the West, I mean, there was a lot of growth in China at that time too, but yeah.
That's true. Yeah. It was, I'd have to look. I think I used to know what the population of Alexandria was in like the Roman period. It was pretty big because it was, Egypt was really important for the ancient world because it was the breadbasket. Like it was mm-hmm. where all the wheat and stuff came from. So Ptolemy, the general, like he eventually declares himself king, and then he creates a dynasty that eventually would end with Cleopatra. She's his long, long distant descendant.
Yeah, because she's Greek.
She's Greek. She's a Greek like settler. Like that's the thing is like people. I've seen people depict Cleopatra like as black and stuff.
She looks like Britney Spears, of course.
It's Britney, bitch, and I am back.
Yeah, that facial reconstruction. But the thing is the Ptolemies were like colonizers. They were not, they're not Egyptians.
The thing is, every single large culture are colonizers, is the thing.
This is true. Like literally nobody.
Every single one. Like, maybe the first people into the Americas were, but actually probably not. Probably pretty much everybody. Like, if you live anywhere in the Levant or North Africa or India or anywhere in Asia, you took somebody else out to get the land that you're on. That's just how it works.
Yeah,
it doesn't make exactly. It okay. I'm just saying that it's just, we have a very look at the last 300 years of history kind of view, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, if you look at history, it's pretty messed up all the way down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So
I'll probably cut that part. I'll be called.
Oh, no. I like that. I think
someone will call me an apologist. But I mean, I'm not apologizing for American colonialism. I'm just trying to say that, like, when you think about your own culture and stuff a lot and the problems with your own culture, it's good and it makes more sense because it's the problems that the people alive near you deal with and still deal with, right? But it kind of becomes a little ethnocentric when you're just talking about how it is your people in this time, the place that you live in. Really, this is the story of humanity, that this is how people got where they are, you know?
Right. So everybody's killed and migrated and fought over land and stuff. Yeah. I was going to say, like, the Ptolemies were, like, because the Persians had done it before the Ptolemies. The Persians had conquered Egypt and deposed, like, the last native Egyptian pharaoh. And then the Persian king became the pharaoh. And then that's what Ptolemy did. Alexander was claimed pharaoh too, so he also did it. But then Ptolemy came in and also claimed himself as pharaoh. And this is the interesting thing. He claimed to be Alexander's half-brother.
That way he had that lineage.
He was Philip II's secret son that nobody mentioned beforehand or anything.
I never mentioned this before. No one else ever mentioned it. But I feel like it's important you know it now.
And like the thing is like we know who Ptolemy's dad was, and Ptolemy was like, yeah, that dad, he just adopted me. He was a very nice guy. So it's a little stupid. It's probably not because I've read books where like they actually like depict it as Ptolemy was legitimately Alexander the Great's half brother. Yeah. Probably like almost certainly not the case. He claimed it because it was like divine kingship and stuff.
Of course, right? Of course.
So like, and then the thing, the body became very important because it was also like, he's my ancestor, he's my relative. So it gives them legitimacy. The Soma, the body, the building eventually became like the family crypt for the Ptolemies as well. Every Ptolemy king was like put in the tomb next to Alexander and stuff. Sure.
It gives you validity, right? Like you are part of this lineage of great people. You are ordained by the fates to rule, you know?
Right. Yeah. And then like a 200, 300 years pass. And we get to Cleopatra. And she's having money troubles and stuff with the Roman Empire, and she loots the tomb for money.
Oh my God!
I know this is the thing.
Talk about a gold digger.
Alexander the Tomb, this poor tomb gets looted several dozen times throughout ancient history.
All the tombs in Egypt pretty much just get looted over and over and over again.
This is true. This is definitely true. Poor Egypt gets just looted. Nobody respects like the mummies. Yeah, Alexander the Great's body, Julius Caesar sees it, and Augustus sees it and stuff. Augustus breaks off its nose.
What the fuck?
By accident?
It's like a fucking Curb Your Enthusiasm thing. He just breaks off the nose and he puts it in his pocket. Has to go like get a nose guy to try to put it back on. It's a whole episode.
He's like, oh shit. He's or was it? I think it was Augustus. I think Augustus did it. Julius Caesar saw the body. Augustus saw the body. Caligula.
Great guy.
I think in one version, Caligula visits the body and steals its breastplate. He rips the breastplate off and wears it as his own because he was like a fanboy. He wanted to be Alexander the Great. But I think there's another version where he just has his local. Like, I don't know if Caligula actually ever visited Alexandria in person. I think he'd like got the governor to tear it off the body or something like that. Jesus anyways, Christ. He kind of was rude to the body. He ripped off the Alexander went through a lot of shit.
It's so strange because Caligula is normally known for being so polite.
yeah, he's a nice guy, Caligula. Yeah. He takes the breastplate, the nose broke off. Later, Caracalla, who is he? Septimus Severus's son? Yeah, he's like basically Caligula 2.0. mm-hmm. And he rips, does he take the ring? I think he takes Alexander the Great's ring.
The ring?
Like a ring. Oh, yeah. the one ring. He's like Schmeagol. He kind of is like a Schmeagol-like character. Because Caligula or Caracalla was like his name comes from like the cloak he wore. He like wore like a weird Gallic cloak all the time. And he was evil. He was pretty mean.
Yeah, he wore a cloak, man.
He wore an evil cloak. And like he was betrothed to like the Persian king's like daughter and used it as a chance to red wedding them, like to kill them all. He was a bad guy. Caracalla was pretty bad. Anyway, so he also stole the ring off and I think looted the tomb. So it's just bad. And then eventually the tomb just goes missing in the 300s to 400s AD. Very silently passes away.
That's not that long after his death then, really.
Yeah. It's like
such an important moment. I mean, like, such an important place.
Like 600 years. Yeah. It's like really not that long.
Years. Yeah.
And it was probably looted a lot in between there. Like we know that the Emperor Aurelian, who was like during the 3rd century crisis, went to Alexandria because it broke off and was ruled by like the Palmyrene Empire with Zenobia. And he looted the city. So it was probably destroyed a lot during then too. So there was just like a whole, and then also there was the rise of Christianity around this time too.
Those guys.
I know. And Alexander the Great was kind of like a Hellenic, like deified ancient Greek god kind of figure. So like they kind of thought it was heresy as well, probably. So around that time, it probably got destroyed by a mix of Christians, Romans, Roman Christians, probably a mix of just everybody. Mm-hmm. And it disappears in the 300s, 400s AD. This very big, huge building that was like a popular tourist attraction, like. It was a huge place, and it was very
part of the lineage of kings. Like cities could be built around it, right? It's important.
Yeah, it was super important.
Gone, unknown.
Like it was probably only second to the lighthouse and the Library of Alexandria as far as important for the city. And it disappears. We don't know what happened to it. So ever since then,
roads, man, just gone.
Yeah, it's just gone. It's crazy. It doesn't appear like there's any. I don't want to spoil any remnants of it. It's all just disappeared into history.
There has to be some of the Colossus left, right? Like if it was real, there has to be.
That's a good question.
Like, it wouldn't just go away. It's made of bronze.
Well, that's the thing. It's like people like melted down bronze and stuff. And then it corrodes.
Sure some of it has to fall in the ocean or something. We've got to have some of it.
Miles, we have like the rocks that might've been inside it for weight, like the boulders that were in its feet and stuff. I think those are in the harbor. I think those are in the harbor. I think that's the best we have, unfortunately. because like the I think we have the platform too. Like I went into this in my video.
Trey did a whole video of this that you should check out. I just love that thing and I want to see it really bad.
I know. So. I wish like because people like because in the Roman era like it was like it fell over but it was still like the remnants were still there. It was really only in the Middle Ages that a sultan like took the bronze or something and apparently just melted it all down. Unfortunately, so it's like, ah, crap. So it's a similar case with this where like almost not like apparently like nothing survives. It was either like completely demolished. But even in the ancient world, you're right that like some of it would be reused in other buildings and stuff. Like there's gotta be buildings that have parts of the tomb. All right. So anyways, people have been looking for the tomb since it disappeared for 2000 years or 1,500 years. People have been looking for the tomb. And there was that story that you sent me that said it was discovered. They finally discovered the tomb.
We did it after all these years.
But I want to note that people have, I always see this, like literally every 5 years, I see a new story about how it's been rediscovered. It's been discovered a lot. Like apparently, allegedly it's been discovered a lot. The Egyptian Supreme Council of Antiquities. I like the Supreme Council. I'm picturing like the Jedi Council.
It's pretty cool.
Has officially recognized over 140 search attempts for Alexander's tomb. I'm really looking for this. A lot of searches. And it's been a debate. Like its exact location in the city has been a huge debate. I wanted to list out like there's several times it's been discovered apparently. So number one is the most popular version is Muhammad El Falaki.
People just pronounce things bad on this show. It's not because of disrespect. It's just because we're ignorant.
So staple.
This guy,
I think he's like a historian or an archaeologist in the 1800s, believed Alexander's tomb was in the center of Alexandria at the intersection of the Via Canopia and the ancient street labeled R5. So like that's one. It's at this intersection of two streets. Yeah. There's not really anything there. Like it's all rubble and stuff. And then Alexandria, it's been continually like Alexandria has literally been continually inhabited since its founding, in like 300 BC. So it's literally been inhabited for like over 2000 years. So everything's like built directly on top of each other. So it's kind of like hard, like buildings have been torn down and then built back up. And then those buildings have been torn down like five times. So it's kind of hard to like, no.
So it could be under some mundane structure and we just don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'll bring that up a little bit later because that's one that this intersection of two streets. In 1850, another guy announced that he discovered Alexander the Great's mummy and tomb inside the Nabi Daniel Mosque. And this is, you're going to love this, Miles.
Did he tell it was his body because he tasted it and it tasted like honey?
That'd be great. That's actually a really smart idea. Like, I think that that would actually be a really great way to identify it if the honey story is authentic.
Like, they always do that thing in movies where people like taste the blood on the ground, right? I'm always like, why did you do that? That's gross. But I mean, you can taste honey. His body if it tastes like honey, right? I mean, that'd be pretty good.
Miles, I'm just picturing this. It's like these guys, he like licks the arm and he goes, honey, I know who this is, or something like that. God damn it, I know this guy. You're going to love this, Mile. In 1888, Heinrich Schliemann attempted to locate Alexander's tomb within Nabi Daniel Mosque, like that location. But get this, Mile. He was denied permission to excavate. Because people didn't trust him.
I know he tried to find Cleopatra's tomb.
Oh yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah, he tried to find that. Of course, he tried to find Alexander's tomb. Why not? Obviously.
My favorite thing is that he was denied permission because people were like, "No, fuck that. We've seen what you do."
He's sitting there with a cart of dynamite. Hey, man, I want to go in here to Alexander's tomb. They're like, "Oh shit, no! that's the last time I've told you.
Get away! Get him away! Get him out of here!" So this mosque was said to be the tomb location, which isn't super un unrealistic, like, especially religious, like, important sites are built directly on top of each other typically. Like, churches are typically built on temple sites and stuff. So that's something.
Good sites, right? They're up high or whatever. Like, there's normally a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, it's on a hill. It's very prominent. So that's a location. That's number two. Number three is in 1993, a Greek archaeologist claimed that Alexander's body was actually buried in the Royal Tomb 2 at Virginia, Greece. Mm. So this is iGuy. This is a site that I'm going to be working at over the summer.
So maybe you'll find it.
And maybe I will. That's the thing. So they claimed that Alexander the Great's body was here. It's not. It's totally not. Because all the historical accounts agree that his body was in Egypt, was in Alexandria, and the tomb was in Alexandria. I don't know why his body would be in Greece. This is the royal tomb. Like, this Virginia, Greece, like, iGuy was like the site for all the Macedonian kings before Alexander. But he was not buried there because his body was hijacked and brought to Alexandria. And it's pretty clear that all the bodies in that tomb, in the royal tomb, it's his dad, like Philip II, and then Philip Aridaeus, like his half brother, and then Alexander the Great's son is probably buried there too. So I guess it's not super unrealistic. Like, the whole entire family is basically there, but except Alexander. It's not in Virginia. I don't know why this archaeologist believed this, because it totally ignores all the historical accounts. Because it's pretty clear.
If any one of those accounts are wrong, it would definitely change where he was.
Yeah. The thing is, like, almost all the accounts agree that he was buried. Like, he was brought to Alexandria. Because the tomb is there. And there was a whole war that was fought over basically his body. Being in Alexandria. So it really kind of messes up the history of, like, no, that actually wasn't. That was like a random guy or something. I guess that's possible. Virginia, it probably isn't the location. Number four, 1995, another Greek archaeologist claimed a structure in the Siwa Oasis was Alexander's tomb. And for those of you who don't know, Siwa Oasis is also in Egypt. It's in the middle of freaking nowhere in Egypt, though. It's like far off the Nile. It's in the oasis in the middle of a desert.
And it's weirdly contradict with the other stories of it being like a center of the town, an important location.
Yeah, exactly. This one actually is interesting to me because according to the historical accounts, or at least one of them, Alexander the Great had a will, and like one of his final wishes was to be buried in the Siwa Oasis. Because like there was the oracle of Siwa was there. And apparently the oracle told him that he was a god and stuff. Like, that was his question to the oracle.
Am I a god? Yeah, sure, man. You're paying.
Well, yeah, that's basically how it goes. That's how it goes with ancient oracles. Well, here's the thing, Miles. Fun fact. The oracle of Siwa was not like a person, like in Greece, like where it was the lady. It was a boat. It was a literal boat. It was a boat on poles, and it would give you an answer depending on if it would bend one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's weird, but that's kind of how that shit is, man. It just never makes any sense, and it's never going to. So
it was like kept in like a dark room, and like it would levitate. Yeah, it would levitate. It would be on the poles, and it would levitate slightly to give you an answer. Like the god would jump in the boat, give you. So anyways, the Siwa Oasis idea, totally baseless. Like, the historical accounts explicitly state that, like, his generals, like, rejected that idea that he was buried there because it was, like, in the middle of nowhere and, like, they needed the body for political reasons. It's, like, there's really no physical evidence to support it. Like, they said it was a physical structure, but, like, there's really no evidence to say that it was a tomb or even that it was associated with Alexander. So that's another one. That's a dud. Number five is like the nuttiest one, which is Saint Mark's Basilica in, I think, Venice.
Still there, right?
Yeah, that's still there. It's not really, I guess, like the tomb. It's just where the body's at. Because is this in Venice, right? Yeah, it's in Venice. Because in the Middle Ages, some Venetian merchants were in Alexandria, which was ruled by like a Muslim sultan at that point. And there was a church that had the tomb of Saint Mark, the evangelist, like the the guy that allegedly wrote the Gospel of Mark. He was like a mummy too, because like he was like a saint, and that's what they do in like Catholicism. And it was a church, a crypt in a church located near the port. And they had heard news that the Sultan was going to destroy the church and built a mosque on top of it. And the merchants smuggled St. Mark's body out of Alexandria and brought it to Italy and built the St. Mark's Basilica on top of the body. And there's like a crazy nutty theory that the St. Mark's body is actually Alexander's body.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, like, there's kind of this thing that happens in, because you have this like head of the, you know, like the Europeans, right? And like the fair skinned people from the Levant northernward, like they've had several empires from Greece to Rome, right? Then like you have Alexander take over and et cetera, et cetera. And like everybody wants to like be the next leader of that like civilization, right? And kind of unite the past with the future. And so like Alexander is like a big kind of like symbol of like the past conquest of that like kind of dispersed culture, right? So like having his body in your possession or in your territory kind of like gives you a lot of like bona fides to say that you're like the new figurehead of this culture. So it seems like a lot of people want to like say they have it because it gives them a lot of political power.
Yeah, and like even like religious, like people when they said the St. Mark's body was brought to Venice, like Venice like rose as like a huge political and economic power.
Yeah.
And like some like very religious people are like, oh, the saint was blessing the city by being there and stuff. So like the idea that it's Alexander is more of a conspiracy theory, like that there was a mummy, like that it's a mummy in Alexandria that of an important person. That's basically it. And I guess the fact that there's like a mosque like that might have been built on top of that church might lend credence to like the first like or the second theory that like it was the Daniel Mosque. Like maybe that was the mosque that was eventually built. But this is like more of like a legend. Like there's really not hard evidence of it. And I guess maybe they could test like the DNA of like St. Mark's body. But like I don't think the Catholic Church would allow that and all that.
You know, it's kind of funny. So like in the beginning, we get like some of the Christians, like they're like, oh, we don't like all this worship of like these bodies because it's kind of like pagan and idol worship and stuff. But then when they get priests, they like are always saving their body parts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like the Catholic thing of like saving the saints and preserving their bodies. Mm-hmm. Is like exactly what like the Greeks did with Alexander.
Yeah, it's Hellenistic. It's a Hellenistic tradition,
and like an Egyptian tradition too of like mummification.
Yeah, but like displaying they're too good for it, but they're not.
Yeah, they're not so different. We're not so different.
You and I.
So that's an idea that St. Mark's Basilica houses the body underneath it. There's really I don't know. Well, like it's an interesting idea, but I don't know if it's realistic. Like there are probably just tons of bodies. You can get tons of, in the ancient world especially, you can get tons of mummified bodies anywhere.
Want a mummified body? I'll get you a mummified body.
You need a saint? You need a saint for your church? I'll get you one. I'll get you a good one. Well preserved.
I'll get you three for a great deal.
So that's number five. Number six is in 2014, there is a large Alexander era tomb called the Kasta tomb in Amphipolis, also in Greece. It's inside this giant mound, like this giant, like a tumulus, which is like a burial mound. And it's one of the largest ever made in the ancient world. And some people said that this is Alexander the Great's tomb. Again, it's in Greece and not like Alexandria. Eventually, it's pretty widely understood that the tomb was intended for Alexander the Great's best friend, this is the other friend. This is Hephaestion. Was his like his love, the love of his life. Who died of like bad wine or something like that? Something he died maybe of a fever or something similar. Like they were like lifelong friends. Like they grew up together. what's his name? Aristotle was like their teacher and wrote that they were like two souls living in one, or one soul living in two bodies and stuff like that.
Is it your opinion that Alexander was most likely gay or bi, or
what do you think about that? Like there's some actual historical accounts that lean into the idea that Alexander the Great was gay. Like he was more into guys. You can be more into guys,
but still bi, you know?
Yeah. He took a wife. Like it's weird. It's weird that he didn't take a wife until very, very late and didn't really father too many kids. Like he allegedly had Alexander, cause there's a lot of debate, like, and this goes into like the political thing that happened after his death. We're like, oh no, that's not actually a son. He had Alexander the IV, with Roxana, and then maybe an illegitimate bastard named Hercules or something like that. But he only had at best, he only had two kids. Which when you compare that to his father, who had literally 50 kids with tons of different women and stuff, it does raise a little bit of eyebrow. And then also there's a lot of ancient sources that bring up that, first of all, we know by several accounts, he had a male lover named Bagoas, who was a Persian. And then Hephaestion is pretty strongly rumored to be his lover as well.
I see.
Hephaestion, it's definite that that was totally his lover. Like it's brought up and he's called as such in several historical accounts. Hephaestion is never explicitly except by Diogenes, and that might be a kind of fragmentary quote. But there's a lot of circumstantial evidence to say that they might have been lovers. They did a very public ceremony where they were at the tombs of Achilles and Patroclus from the Iliad. And by that time, so in the Iliad, it's never in the Iliad, they probably weren't lovers, Achilles and Patroclus, but eventually, by the time of Alexander, the popular consciousness was that they were. So doing a public ceremony like that was pretty in the cultural context was pretty much saying yeah, we're gay, that we're associating ourselves with these icons. And then also how he acts after his death is a little I don't know. People can that's just it's hard to say because people react to their friends dying and stuff. Alexander the Great reacted very, very strongly to Hephaestion dying, more so than literally anybody else in his entire lifetime. If they were just friends, they were super, super incredibly close friends. So I don't know. It's a possibility. Everything's a possibility.
Yeah, and it's hard to say. And the way cultures think about sexuality changes, you know?
Yeah. The thing is that it's not unrealistic. It's not a crazy idea to say that, oh yeah, they might've been lovers. Like in ancient Greece, especially for Macedonians, they had male lovers and stuff like that. That was a pretty common thing. So yeah. So, cause there's people that are no, they were definitely just friends. How dare you? You're just looking into things way too much. It's saying that possibility.
When the film came out, and there was just a little bit of a hint of the homosexual relationship, it was a big controversy.
Oh yeah, the Greek government sued Oliver Stone over it, which is come on, the Greek, it's like Greeks, come on. You're one of the gayest civilizations out there.
I know, right?
I've gotten into internet arguments over saying that Hephaestion was probably Alexander's lover, but the evidence is pretty we'll never know with a lot of this stuff.
Sure. But yeah, we'll never know, but it seems like it's more reasonable than not.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the behavior and then knowing that Alexander the Great was into guys. So anyways, this tomb in Amphipolis, has Hephaestion's name engraved on the walls. And this is very recent research. This is within the last couple years. So it was probably intended for him and not for Alexander, because he died before Alexander, 8 months before, and might have actually been a factor in why Alexander the Great died, because he didn't take care of his health and stuff after Hephaestion's death.
That's sad.
I know. Hephaestion was like Hephaestion, regardless of like who he was to Alexander, was like his like rock, like was yeah. like his like the person that kept him in check and was like he was his like second in command. And like if Alexander the Great died, like the command would have fallen to Hephaestion without a doubt.
So he but probably did better than the rock that buried him, because that seems to have not kept him in place.
Yeah. He's gone. Oh. Yeah, so that's number six. Okay, it's probably not. Sorry, I'm almost done.
No, that's good though. So we're six into it. There's six different tombs of Alexander the Great, and none of them have been very convincing to you, and I believe aren't convincing to mainstream archaeologists as well. Or at least they're not definitive.
Yeah, like all of them have problems. Like at best, I think the most compelling is the first one, which is like saying that it was located at this intersection of two streets. Like ancient roads, but there's no physical evidence there. You know, it's all gone. So it's like, oh, like it probably was there, but like it's just non-existent now. In 2019, now we're getting to like the more recent research. A Greek archaeologist like by the name of Calliope. There's no N in there. Sorry, Calliope Papakosta. She's a female archaeologist. Who is really into Alexander the Great. Like I read some of her interviews with her and some of the stuff she says is pretty crazy, like or pretty exciting. Like she's really into it. She's digging in Alexandria like right now. Like I think she's still digging. And she found a marble bust of Alexander in the Shala Atlat Gardens.
I can't help you with these pronunciations.
It's a park. It's like an old park. Located near, and Miles, we're getting into it, located near McDonald's. It's right next to like a McDonald's, which led some suggesting that the tomb might have been located there in these gardens, like at this site. I don't think it's super compelling because like it's the city of Alexandria. And of course, there's like a bust of Alexander in the city. Like he's one of the most widely depicted people in the ancient world as far as like busts and in bronzes and stuff. Like there's a lot of Alexander the Great busts. So just finding one in like the city at one location does not prove that it was like, that's like, oh, the temple was located there or the tomb was located there. Like it could have just been like a statue, you know, that was just like a public statue or even like a private statue, like somebody had in their home.
Sure. I have a statue of Lenin not far from my house. I don't think he's there.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Like Vladimir Lenin or John Lennon?
Not the Beatles one.
It was like John Lennon? Oh, Vladimir. Yeah, exactly. Because Vladimir Lenin, it's funny, like his tomb, he's like on public display in Russia, right?
Yeah.
In a way that's very, very similar to Alexander, where he's in like a glass case and like preserved as like a mummy.
Just like Snow White.
Just exactly. Yeah. Yep. Alexander the Great, Snow White, Vladimir Lenin. What do they have in common? They're all in glass cases. So that's one. That's one. And she in an interview, she was like, she's like, for 14 years, we searched without results. I was so tired. And one day I said, that's it. I quit. Just 1 hour before our departure, after we had stopped the excavation, the soil retreated on one side and a hand appeared. I felt awe. My Alexandros revealed himself to me.
Oh.
So it's almost like a religious experience for her working at this dig site. I think it's funny that she almost quit. Like she's like, I'm done looking for this tomb. This tomb is a waste of time. And then the statue revealed itself to her.
My child, now I'm here.
I think like she's, as an archaeologist, you want to find something important, and sometimes I think some archaeologists kind of like dilute ourselves, or you know, you want to be excited and finding stuff is exciting, but like I think maybe she's reading into it a little too much.
I see.
So that's seven. It's near McDonald's. And then eight is another claim that it's in the Siwa Oasis. That's like in 2021, Egyptian officials claim this. I'm not really sure who they were. I don't think it's in the Siwa Oasis. And then this is the article that you sent me, which is this year, 2023.
Yeah. This is the new hot story.
So it's the same female archaeologist, Papa Costa. And in the article, it says, claiming her team discovered a large building in the royal quarter of Memphis, later integrated into the city of Alexandria. So I read this and I was like, this doesn't, well, Alexandria is spelled wrong too. The article. So I'm a little suspicious that this article, like, as far as I know, Papa Costa is still in Alexandria working at that site near the McDonald's. And for it to say that a building in the royal quarter of Memphis, later integrated into the city of Alexandria, doesn't really make much sense because the city of Memphis is really far away. And I don't really see how it can be incorporated into the city of Alexandria because it's like literally like miles and miles away from it. And then the fact that there's like a grammar, like a spelling error, I'm thinking that like this is like a crap story that somebody made up, you know? That like it's the original story was likely talking about the gardens location, but like somebody conflated something else. Like, yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah, so I don't think it's in Memphis.
Do it for a headline to recycle an old story that commonly gets clicks.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly what happened with this story. So we got nine, or I guess there's like eight options. Miles, does any of these sound compelling to you?
It seems to me most likely his body and many of the relics have been lost to history. There definitely was a site that was there, and maybe some of the structure is there. We might be able to find one day and piece together, but I think most likely these artifacts and his body are gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think there's nothing left, unfortunately. Like,
maybe, though, the honey will get really old and then turn to, like, amber. I don't know if honey does that, but let's just say so.
And some then, ants will climb, or like, we'll find a trail of ants to the location.
And then we can take his DNA out of the amber.
Oh, and then
mix it with some frog DNA, and then boom, Alexander so the Great dumb. Park.
I'm just picturing this. He breaks out, like, and he's like chasing people with like a spear.
You could call it a Hellenistic Acres. It could be a new park.
I want the idea that like he gets out and he can't help but not conquer. He's like, I must conquer. And he's like chasing people down.
Yeah. He just has flags and he's planting them everywhere.
And he's like, I need to get off the island.
Breaks into the zoo, takes the elephants. I must ride them over these mountains.
Welcome to Hellenistic Park. It's just a guy.
All our young men.
It's just a guy in like a large enclosure, just standing there. Greek guy. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Goldblum can put his head on his chest.
I talked to. He can put his head on his chest and he'll rise and fall. That's one big pile of shit. One big pile of Alexander the Great shit. I like proposed an idea to like a genetics professor for like testing DNA. Like we could test the DNA of like the eye guy, like the Virginia tomb, which has like Alexander the Great's dad, half brother and son, get DNA from that and like test a whole bunch of mummies to see like candidate mummies, like Saint Mark maybe, and like test the DNA of it. And see if like it matches or is related to those. And he like shot it down. He was like, yeah, aww. No, he was like, yeah, no, that probably won't work. And like, he's like, that's what did he say? He said, that's a historical question. And that's not going to get any funding from like a university or something. I was like, oh, damn it. Oh, come on. And so that's he shot sad. My dreams down. But yeah,
I believe in your dreams, buddy.
Yeah, maybe I'm going over there. I'm going to be working at the Virginia, like the eye guy site. It's the royal tombs of all like the Macedonian kings and also like a whole bunch of nobles. And like odds are I'm going to be working on a tomb that was like a minor noble's tomb or something like that,
right?
Which is cool, but I'm probably not going to find anything super crazy.
I believe
you never know. You never know. Yeah. So Alexander the Great's tomb discovered for the ninth time.
I'm sure a bunch of creationists have said they found it too. They're always finding stuff.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Ken Ham. He's like, I found Alexander the Great's tomb. Why did I turn him into like,
I don't know. He does not
like his
sound
Finch.
Like
I turned him into like
a, it's just not accurate.
Did you watch Kitten Boots, Puss in Boots too?
No, although I was told Puss in Boots is actually good.
It's really good. It's really
good. Yeah, I was surprised. You know,
there's a little cricket character.
I'm not as big of a Shrek fan as you are. So,
oh, even for non-Shrek fans, it's pretty good. There's a little cricket character who talks.
What are Shrek fans called? Shrekers.
Shrekers.
I hope so.
Shrekheads. Shrekheads.
I like Shrekers because it's Trekkers for Star Trek, so it's like Shrekers. Yeah.
I like that. I like that. Yeah.
Greenies. You call them greenies.
The greenies. Greenies. So yeah, that's Alexander Great's tomb. I'll keep my ears open. You know, you never know what you're going to find with archaeology. Like, there's more and more people becoming archaeologists, and the methods are getting better. The thing is with Egypt, everybody wants to dig in Egypt, and like people have been digging in Egypt for like 300 years or more. So it's like, what else can you find?
They're chasing that King Tut high. You know, everybody wants to find their King Tut room. But.
Everybody wants to find an unplundered tomb. And I guess Virginia was that. Virginia in like the 90s, like 1993. Like, that was a big deal that the tomb, like, the in Greece, like, was an unplundered tomb. Like, Philip II's tomb, like, this really, really famous historical figure. Nobody had broken into it after 2,000 years. Like, that's a huge deal, the fact that everything's intact.
We didn't find Alexander's tomb.
Nope.
But, you know, some guys who are going to find what they're looking for most definitely and never fail?
Oh, who's that, Miles?
Monster Quest!
Monster Quest.
Head start.
Witnesses around the world report seeing monsters. Are they real or imaginary? Science searches for answers. On Monster Quest.
Witnesses around the world. What are we looking for, Miles? What's the creature? What's the monster of the week? What's the...
Spider-Man.
Oh my god.
No, not Spider-Man, but
Spider-Man.
A spider that's the size of half a man.
Oh my god. It's a big spider.
Yeah. It's a great big spider.
This episode literally started. I'm going to write this down. I know I'm not in chronological order, or I guess I like kind of am. I need to say this. The episode starts and I like literally went, "Oh shit." Like an audible "oh shit." Because it's a British man talking, who I recognized right away, who I kind of have not a personal relationship, but we've like talked in the YouTube comment section.
We got a beef with this guy.
I do have a beef with this guy. I was like, oh, look who it is. What is his name? William Gibbons. Oh my God. Who is a famous young earth creationist who... I know because we'll get to this in a different episode, the future episode. Stay tuned for the Munkelium Bembe episode about that dinosaur in the Congo.
Yeah. We'll get to Munkelium Bembe when we get there. That'll be definitely an interesting episode.
I think the clip that they have him talking is taken from that episode because he doesn't show up in this episode besides that like short interview.
Yeah.
So I think they took it from there and reusing it. So I went, oh shit, I know this guy. yeah. So what's in this? So we got giant spiders.
Well, yeah. And then also not a giant spider. We have the camel spider as well. So we're looking for like a giant tarantula type spider that possibly exists in like the Congo or maybe South America. They're kind of taking two shots at it existing. But also the camel spider, which is, of course, in Iraq and Saudi Arabia and other places like that. And a lot of Westerners came into contact with the camel spider while we invaded Iraq in the mid-aughts.
And they freaked out.
Yeah. I actually really remember this because some of my friends were GIs that were in Iraq at the time. And I actually heard a lot of these myths about camel spiders, which, of course, are not camels nor spiders.
I was trying to find why they give the myth on why they're called camel spiders, but I want to know what the actual reason why they're called camel spiders are.
Oh, the actual reason is because people believe they eat the stomachs out of camels.
Oh, that's so stupid. That's so stupid that the name comes from a myth.
That's it.
Oh, they're kind of, I will say they're kind of creepy looking.
Yeah. So these are solifuges, which are very distinct from spiders evolutionarily. They're like their common ancestors, like you know, tens of millions of years in the past, so that they're not really related at all.
They have legs instead of, ten legs instead of eight.
Yeah, and they eat with these pooling mandibles, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of like the little mouth things that spiders have. I don't know what the actual name is. But the solifuges, called wind scorpions, appear. I have seen them in the wild many times while camping in Northern California. We find them under rocks and stuff. I always thought they were crazy cool and crazy weird. Mm-hmm. I was a little scared of them because, like, you just don't have that much information about them, you know? I think that's why some of these, like, claims about them became popular, because, you know, Google wind scorpion or camel spider on your phone right now if you haven't seen them. They look pretty weird.
They look like something out of an alien movie.
Yeah.
Oh, they're closer related to daddy long legs. Oh, yes. And I can see it. And then ticks and stuff too. Then they actually are the true spiders or scorpions. That's crazy.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, they're barely their spiders.
Own branch of life. So.
Wow. I thought they were related to scorpions because they kind of look like scorpions, but the daddy long legs actually makes more sense to me. I can see it. Like they're big daddy long legs. That's crazy.
Daddy long legs is a great name, by the way, for
what do you have those things? What do you call them by different names?
There are a lot of daddy long legs in Northern California. Mm-hmm. I have not seen them since I moved up to Seattle, actually. Oh. We don't have as many bugs just out and about up here because it's cold. I mean, they're here, and you can see them if you go look for them, but you don't see them just scurrying around as much as I did in Northern California. So
they're probably in, like, logs and stuff and all that.
Yeah, man. It's fucking cold.
You gotta stay warm.
so there's some rumors. Right? Why do they think that there's a large spider? Like, where are they getting the story that there's a spider larger than any known spider in these areas?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff like that says it. Like, for one thing, William Gibbons, that young British lad, he's old man. He tells a story about how in the jungles of Congo in Central Africa, a British explorer in 1938, R.K. Lloyd, he was driving with his wife, and a giant spider ran out in front of their old timey car. And was like the size of, how big was it? It was like the size of a person, right? It was huge.
Like a large dog or something is how they explained it.
Yeah. So there's like these weird legends of giant, huge spiders.
Well, what's really monstrous is the reason that these people were in the Congo.
Oh, it was a honeymoon, right?
I would definitely not look up why what the Belgians did to the Congo.
Oh.
In the top 10 worst things that humans have ever did, it's not in the bottom five. So
shoot.
Dang. Yeah. Not good. Anyway.
So there's these. Hopefully some of these guys got killed by spiders as retribution.
Yeah, if they were part of this colonialism that was going on by Belgium, then yeah, you know. Get them spiders.
Get them spiders. These are huge. These spiders are huge. Oh my gosh. They're like huge dog sized spiders. Allegedly, we've never actually found one of these yet. We'll see if Monster Quest shows us right. And then also in South America, there's apparently legends of giant spiders. We meet a guy in the Piru tribe. Piru? Mm-hmm. In Venezuela, who claims to have seen in his childhood a giant spider, I think like the size of a dog, take a dog and kill it and then run it back into the forest.
Can't be killing dogs, man.
Yeah, he said it reared up and it raised up to the size of a human. It's quite a big spider right there. This shaman says the story.
So at least raises up 5 feet then. That's crazy.
So... yeah, so there's all these like little fragmentary legends of.
There's one from 1890 that they don't mention in the episode.
Ooh,
So this spider actually has a name. This cryptid has a name, and it's a Jabba Foofy. It was first seen by this white Catholic guy named John Symes, and he and his two assistants were out bushwhacking, and the two dudes got stuck in a web. And then these spiders that were over 4 foot long came down to get them. And the web was extremely tough. Like, we're talking like Black Widow type strong, you know, spider silk. and he could just barely get them out, and he did manage to pull them out, but one of them got bitten, and he tried to take care of him and bring him back to camp, but he ended up dying because of the venom.
Man, that's crazy. I didn't realize they made webs and humans got stuck in them like Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's exactly like Harry Potter.
Like Aragog.
Probably equally as problematic. Here in Africa.
Dang. Yeah, so there's spiders that can eat dogs, that can eat humans, alleged in these old stories.
Yeah, and of course, large spiders are in a lot of folklore and culture, right?
Yeah.
So you have Arachne in Greek mythology, right? Where she was like this little egotistical girl that wanted to be like the big influencer and like spin the best yarns ever. And like she had this cool color purple that no one could do. And everyone's like, oh, shit, you're the best. And then like one day Athena, you know, she did that Greek god thing where you pretend not to be a Greek god so you can judge someone. Mm-hmm. And then Athena comes down and she's like, oh, you know, don't be so vain, like give respect to the gods. And then Arachne was like, fuck you. I don't care about that. I care about likes. And then Athena popped back into her normal form. Was like, oh shit, I got you. You're on my YouTube show where we punk mortals. And Arachne's like, I can outspin you any day. And so they had a spinning contest, you know? It was like the walk off in Zoolander, but for like quilting or whatever they were doing. Mm-hmm. And Arachne and Athena, you know, they start going out like, you know, they're playing like everyone's working for the weekend or whatever fucking theme song they're playing while this is going on. People are cheering them on. And then Athena shows off hers, and it's beautiful, man. It shows the gods being super cool. Zeus is there, Poseidon's there, you know, all the greatest hits, you know, Hermes, whoever. Everyone's looking beautiful. Everyone's looking blessed, hashtag. And Arachne flips hers open, and it's a fucking atheist shitpost, you know? She's like Me Too and Zeus, saying how shitty he is, saying all these gods are womanizers, and they got no respect for mortals, and they're all a bunch of punks, and they should be canceled. And then Athena's like, I can't believe you, bitch. And I'm going to turn you into a spider. And she did that. And now she has to, like, you know, do her thread making and stuff out of her abdomen. And that's where spiders come from. Is Athena is jealous and doesn't like / atheism on Reddit. And so, like, like that's, you know, we got that story. And then, like, the Hopi people of North America, they have a whole story about, like, a spider going and getting the sun and being, like, hella cool and nice, which is kind of different, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, a popular, like, African story, like, they have their spider god, Ansi or Anshi. He is, like, a trickster god, almost like in Jewish mythology or, like, a Bernard in European mythology, where it's, like, he's all about, like, tricking other people and getting one up on them with his cleverness, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes to the All-Father God, who, like, knows all the great stories. He has the best DVD collection and everything. And, you know, this spider guy's like, hey, humans are bored. We're just like, you know, eating pigs and eating wild rice. And it's really tough down here. Like, we got no internet. And the god's like, tough shit, man. And he's like, well, help us out. He's like, and so he gave him an impossible task they could never do, right? He's like, oh, there's this super famous leopard and snake and hornet and this little forest spirit. Like, everyone knows them, that you'll never catch them. They're really smart, really good, like named high level creatures, right? He's like, if you bring me those four things, I'll give you my DVD collection. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. And then he goes out, long story short, he tricks them all, right? All gets them on a scenario, like just messes them up, outsmarts those little dudes, brings them back. And then he's kind of like Prometheus, like bringing fire to the people, but he brings the stories to all the tribes in West Africa there. So, like, we have a lot of, like, spider characters in mythology. You know, humans have a fascination with spiders, seems both as big monster dudes or maybe that they're, you know, a story about their webs because their webs are really interesting, or a story about them being kind of clever and sneaky. And one of the most popular modern mythologies, of course, in Tolkien, we have Ungoliant, who is the big creature that crawls out of, like, the blackness of creation and eats, like, the first light that was ever in the world, and almost eats Melkor, which is, like, the source of all evil in the world. So even in that story, you know, like, the core darkness, the thing that's, like, more evil than evil itself is a spider. So.
Dang. And she was Shelob's, like, ancestor, right?
Yeah, Shelob is a descendant several times down the line from Ungoliant. Shelob is much weaker than Ungoliant. So,
right. Dang. You mentioned the Hopi have something about like the spider trickster god, right?
The Hopi one goes and gets the sun. It's kind of the exact opposite, actually, of the Ungoliant story in Tolkien.
Interesting, because I just remembered from my Bigfoot knowledge. A Bigfoot is Iktomi, which is a Lakota version of it. I just realized that it's the Lakota version probably of a similar culture hero.
Yeah,
Iktomi is the spider trickster spirit, and the only reason I know about it is because some Bigfoot people say he's Bigfoot, even though he's a spider trickster god.
Even though he's not Bigfoot.
Even though he's not Bigfoot, even though he's a spider, little trickster like Loki.
Well, so, if there's something we know for sure, right? Something being not Bigfoot has no impact on if people think it's Bigfoot or not.
I think I was in a Bigfoot museum or something. I saw Iktomi and probably this Hopi version probably in the Bigfoot thing. Like, oh, yes, this is it. Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah, dang. So spiders have religious significance. People fear them. People worship them. People think they're good.
Yeah, they get around.
Well, humans have almost a primal reaction. I won't say fear because I don't know if it's super culturally relative of spiders. At least in Western culture, spiders are pretty feared. Like they're scary.
Oh, I think spiders just look very alien from us. You know, you can't see their face. Like you can't look at their eyes. You can't make any kind of contact with them. Even something that is often monstrous in stories like a wolf or something, you can have some communication with a wolf, right? Mammal to mammal. Right. Like you have some familiarity. You can look at it and be like, hey, I'm not bad. Look at me. Let's make a treaty. You know, you can kind of do that with certain animals. As long as they're not damn set and eating you, which, you know, obviously animals don't do that very often. Animals aren't monsters. Right. But you just can't communicate with a spider. There's nothing you could do. I feel like creatures like that feel more dangerous because it's not that they're out to get us, but in our mind, we can't really protect ourselves because they're sneaky and we can't communicate with them. So
you're right. They're they're so alien. Yeah. They're basically distantly related to us. So primal. It's like a jellyfish almost. Yeah. And the legs are creepy. Like the fact that they have hair, like independently evolved hair and hairy legs, it's a little creepy. Yeah. And then a giant one. Oh gosh. We see the little ones in our house and we go, oh, that's scary. Just picturing a giant spider.
What would you even fucking do against a giant spider?
That's a good point. That's a good, cause I struggle to kill even tiny spiders. It's a little scary. And in this thing. So the one of the big hurdles here with the giant spider idea is, can spiders even get that big?
Yeah, so they to their credit actually bring that up, right?
Yeah.
So the spiders, of course, we're talking about being distant from us. They don't breathe the same way we do, right?
No, they absorb oxygen through their skin, right?
Yeah. So they have these chambers, and these chambers bring in oxygen and they move it. So it's very limited. So if you look at the fossil record of the largest spiders that ever existed, you'll see ones that are larger up to the size they're talking about, right? Like these monster spiders. Monsters, but large.
There was, it's interesting. There was one that was a giant, people thought it was a giant arachnid during the Carboniferous period, which is when all the bugs were big. And it was thought to be a giant arachnid that was literally the size of a human head or a cat. Later that was shown to be, it's a Eurypterid, which is a sea scorpion. Which they bring up in this series, because sea scorpions got really, really big. They got like the biggest of them were probably crocodile sized. So arthropods could get big at some periods in history. I don't know if spiders specifically, but close relatives.
One thing to think about is, so spiders and their family, right? Spiders have to live above the water and they have an exoskeleton. And that exoskeleton has weight and they have to shed it as they grow. So the ability to move oxygen around their body and to deal with the weight of the exoskeleton are two pressures that keep down their size. And one of them is like just pure physical limitation, like the physics of the way the world is and how you can move oxygen, right? Like it's not negotiable unless there's a new developed strategy, like, you know, a circulatory system, which they don't have. Crabs, a lot of them can live underwater, right? So, I mean, there are some crabs that live in the shallows or go on land, like coconut crabs, right? Which are quite fucking large, larger than these spiders. Yeah. But they have a different kind of exoskeleton that they can deal with the weight. They have the body structure for it. And then also they get to be in water, which lowers the amount of weight they have to deal with, right? Or their top weight. So, like, those are just different things. Like, I think the more you think of it, the harder it is for to think of a spider possibly getting as large as these rumors.
Yeah, this is and the oxygen levels aren't as high today for them to take up oxygen through their skin.
And they talk about that, right? So like insects in the past were larger because there was more oxygen in the air. So
I've heard of people on the internet saying that we should produce more oxygen and the insects will grow bigger.
Yeah, I guess
we'll fill the oxygen, the atmosphere with like higher oxygen. I don't know if that's how it would work either. Like the insects would just suddenly grow bigger within our lifetimes. Like I think it would be a gradually evolved kind of thing.
Yeah, you got to put some selective pressure on it, right? I mean,
yeah, like, yeah. So the problem with these cryptids is that logically, like logistically, like evolutionarily, they don't make much sense. Like they can't really exist. Like I think the spider, the size of like the largest like tarantulas is kind of like the biggest you can really get, you know, like there might be bigger ones, but probably not much bigger, you know?
Yeah. That's just a size lock. Like you can imagine some creatures getting like, you know, 10, 20% larger than any known version, which is still pretty massive, but there's just a hard cap on these spiders. So it's kind of hard to be like, oh, is there a giant one hidden? It's like, I don't think there can be, regardless if there is, like, you know, so it's kind of a non-starter more than a lot of the other cryptids, unfortunately.
Right. Because they I feel like they actually bring that up, that like the spiders that they're looking for are like 10 times larger than the largest known spider. So like that's a really large increase in size for them not to be like
precedent. It's a fundamental difference between what we currently understand if these spiders were to exist.
Yeah,
what do they do to try to find these then, Trey?
So what we do is we send a guy, the spider expert, Rick C. West. Mm-hmm. He's actually pretty famous. He's actually a pretty well-respected spider expert.
That's cool.
What are they called? Like arachnidist or something like that?
Sure, whatever, yeah.
They have a specific name. They said it in the show. And he's actually really famous because he has spiders named after him. Like he's named a whole bunch of spiders, like dozens and dozens of new species of spiders. And then he's so famous that like probably his students have named different species after him.
Damn, cool.
Because I don't think scientists are allowed to name species after themselves anymore. Like I think you were allowed to do that in like the 1800s, but now it's kind of frowned upon. But you are allowed to name them after somebody you know. Like you can't name them after yourself, but you can name them after like another person.
So that's why you got to get lots of students then, so you can get some stuff named after.
This is an incentive to be a good teacher. Have friends. And so he's pretty famous for identifying new species of spider. There's probably tons of them still yet to be identified. And and he goes out to the Amazon basin of Venezuela to look for some spiders to find any bigger species, any new species. He flies out there and he has this guide. I like Rick West. I do not like his guide. I don't know if you didn't like the guy. I just like his guide. I could tell was like a little too gullible in these stories.
I don't think he was equipped with the kind of, just the kind of education you need to deal with these kind of people.
Maybe
cryptid people, you know, like they have a certain way of kind of encouraging you to think that they're like, it's reasonable that they're on these trails and stuff. And he's just kind of being, you know, he's just kind of being positive, I guess. But like,
yeah,
you're being positive in like a negative direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah. He's a little too, he seemed a little naive to me because he was like, so with Rick and the guy, this is where we get the story from the shaman, the Piro shaman of like the human sized spider that killed a dog. And he like accepts the story at face value. I'm assuming Rick doesn't, cause we don't actually get to really hear much of Rick's side of the story. But the guide is like, he's like, I believe him. They live out here. I believe that they're accurate what they're saying. And he says they have no reason to make up these stories.
Yeah. Why do people always say that? You know, like, people always it's say like, that. We're not, first of all, they do actually, but it's not required that be true. Like people just are wrong about stuff, you know?
Right, like William Gibbons, like the guy that showed up at the beginning, he says the same exact thing about the Munkillian Bembe stories, which is it's kind of funny that this is a similar situation where you have Western, like scientists. Well, William Gibbons isn't really a scientist. Western people, let's just say Western like travelers, go into like native areas and native sources tell them that a cryptid is out there, and they take them at face value, like they believe them 100%. Like, oh yeah, they can't be lying. They're telling the truth. Like there's this weird double standard almost when it comes to cryptozoology to like believe, like to accept, like to, I don't know, to not believe that native people can make up stories or lie and stuff like that, that they're always truthful to you, which is not true.
Yeah. It's definitely a thing, right? They're just people. They can be fooled by cryptids just as easily as anybody else can. So,
right. Because the thing is another thing is that like they, when you actually look into the details, like they kind of do have a reason, like an incentive to make up stories or to tell these researchers what they want to hear. Because like the researchers are staying in their villages and bringing money and like tourism there.
Yeah, and they're bringing kinda them Gatorade and or whatever, you know, it's just stuff that they can use. And so like, yeah, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, man, I saw that thing. Keep on bringing me stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's more like I know more of like the Munkillian Bembe situation where the situation was that like researchers had been going there for year after year for decades. And like they're like, we got to keep these people coming because they're basically like building our economy. They're visiting our village and not this other village. So we got to tell them.
I mean, good on them, man. Stories. Get yourself money. I don't care.
No, it's good. I say to manipulate the global people, but yeah. There's like, I have a problem with that when like cause the guide is like, I believe what they're saying was accurate and like, they know their animals. I don't think it's a monkey or like a sloth or something. Like they would know they live in these forests and stuff. And they like, he ignores the more likely possibility they could just be making up the story, you know?
Also, just a few people believe it there, and most other people don't. You know, you talk to
maybe they just found the one guy in the village that's crazy, the crazy uncle.
So they find their huts, and they show them their huts, and they build them down to the ground and then outwards, right, to make sure that they say that the big spiders don't come drag people off, right? That's how they describe it. But I mean, like, that's a pretty practical solution to bugs in general, right? So like, the fact that they have designed their huts to be bug proof to me is an evidence that there's giant spiders, just like that, like he tries to make it seem. It just seems like they engineered their huts well to protect themselves from bugs entering, which, you know, is a pretty reasonable thing to do.
I know some people who live in like tropical areas where they live in houses and they'll design their houses so that like, because periodically, depending on where you are, like army ants will sweep through the forest and sweep into your house. And some people just like they'll put their, what is it? They put the legs of their table in cups of water or something, so that the army ants can't climb on like the furniture, but they'll go on like the floor and clear out all the bugs and other like insects and spiders and stuff.
I get it. It makes it interesting.
Yeah, like people doesn't redesign their home, but it doesn't mean like it's a giant spider. Like it could just be like regular smaller bugs and stuff. So there are dangerous bugs out there that aren't necessarily big.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that where like, I don't know, they're not really critically thinking, and we don't. I feel like we don't actually get to see much of Rick, like what Rick has to say, because Rick is a scientist. And I feel like he maybe doesn't really believe in the stuff that Monster Quest was kind of bolstering up.
I suspect not.
So yeah, he was out there. He's like, I want to find. Like he's like, yeah, if there's a giant spider out there, I'll find it. He's like, I'm not. He's not super optimistic about it.
I think. Yeah. We also, of course, look on the Solifuge side. Yes. And then they have two scientists, and they both go out and try to catch a Solifuge. Now, these two scientists know Solifuge pretty well, so they don't believe at all in these stories of them being monstrous or very large, but they're trying to catch one to show to camera a good specimen.
In the Solifuge, they're famous because of that one picture, right? The giant photo.
Yep, and this is in 2004, and I remember this photo, like, actively when this is going around. This is all over. I remember talking to people about this and, like, hearing people tell me stories. So, like, I often heard back then in the day, camel spiders would run behind Humvees in the shade and would run as fast as the Humvee going down the road. I heard that Humvees would get in people's beds and bite them. I heard that they would eat camel stomachs. I heard that they would be like the size of cats. I heard all these things from people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, some of the stuff is in the episode. They do a reenactment of a guy getting like bit in the leg or whatever, right?
Yeah,
but like this is real stuff. So this image, of course, we see this famous camel spider image. If you Google camel spider, I'm sure it's one of the top things that come up. This is just the famous fisherman's trick. It's a perspective thing, right?
I was reminded of you. You told me like how fishermen like literally hold out the fish in front of the camera and make it look bigger.
Yeah, you hold it out and up away from your body and it makes it look larger. It's a famous trick. So that's all that's happening. Also, that image is two Solifuges.
Yeah, biting on one another or something like that.
Yeah, which strangely like never really got brought up a lot. Like it's kind of obvious when you think of it like, oh, there's two creatures here.
It makes it look bigger. Yeah. And it's weird, like, that nobody's been able to identify these people in the picture, right? Like, still to this day, like, these soldiers haven't been identified.
Yeah. So, you know, like, that image doesn't show a giant one. As far as we can tell, Solifuges cannot run as fast as to chase the shadows of a Humvee, although they will follow shade, which is reasonable. You know, they do that. That is a real thing. But they can't, you know, just sprint down the...
In the Monster Quest, they say that they run 25 miles per hour, apparently, which is insane. That's like for something that's small to run that fast. That's insane.
I believe they do not run that fast.
I don't think so either.
I think that's an exaggeration. Not that they can't run fast for a bug. They scurry quite quickly, but not quite that. I can
totally see how like myths and like legends like this spread during like the early days of the internet. Yeah. Like, everybody has like a relative who's over in Iraq or somebody that they know. And then one thing starts, they see in an email, an AOL email talking about like, oh yes, we had these creepy camel spiders. And then like people who aren't familiar with them just spreads and spreads. Yeah. Dang.
Yeah. That's 100% what happened.
They're scary looking, but I don't think they're that dangerous. Right. They
still a huge, do not pose any realistic threat to humans. Their mandibles would hurt you, and it is possible, and it has happened a few times in history that they will like bite onto somebody, and they're kind of messy up because they like have little enzymes and stuff that'll soften you, but it's so rare, like you're much more likely to be attacked by all kinds of things. Attacked isn't the word, right? They're not attacking people, but you know, like having a negative experience with a Solifuge is extremely rare, and you're not going to find it very much. You know, it should be like in the bottom 0.01% of your concerns in life. So,
right. Like you should be more scared about of like a black widow than a Solifuge, right?
Well, black widow is legitimately kind of scary, I think.
Yeah. When they got the venom.
A black widow will not attack you, you know, but if you accidentally sit on one or something, it could bite you, which can be quite harmful. So.
Yeah. I speaking of spider bites, I wrote this little story on here because this is like a personal story. I was at my grandma's like retirement place, and an old man once told me this weird, bizarre story about how in Vietnam a weird spider, I think it was a weird spider that he'd never seen before or something. I should have wrote it down as soon as he told me because it was a weird story. He was in Vietnam. He was stationed there in the jungle, and a spider bit him on his thumb.
Hmm.
And then years later, he got cancer on that same finger.
Okay.
Are those two things related? And also, like, how reliable is this old man? But it was just like crazy to me that, like, oh, maybe there's like a undiscovered species of spider in Vietnam that gives you cancer bites. And it was like,
maybe it was all the Agent Orange we dropped on that country.
Yeah. Again, that's the more likely thing. The Agent Orange or asbestos or whatever that everybody in that era had around them. But yeah, that's, or just like skin cancer. Maybe it was skin cancer because he's out in the sun.
Vietnam is very hot. So
yeah. So that, anyways, weird. So the spider, I don't know. In my head, it created such a weird image of like a spider bite that gives you cancer, as opposed to Spider-Man giving you powers and just gives you cancer. It's terrible.
Well, Spider-Man did have a radioactive sperm.
Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, isn't that a thing? It's like a comic.
Yeah. Oh. Not one of the better Spider-Man series.
Sorry, random story. I felt the need to bring it up because this old guy told me a bizarre story. And it's interesting because Vietnam does have a lot of undiscovered species there and stuff. Like I think it's where we found that deer, Laos. Right?
And Laos is where we found a spider in like 2001, which is one of the largest known spiders. The hunter spider was actually found in Laos, which is, you know, relatively close to Vietnam. So,
oh, I'm going to see the hunter spider. Oh God, looks terrifying.
Yeah, it's one of the largest spiders that there is. So, the huntsman spider. Yeah,
Jesus. Have you ever held a tarantula, Miles?
Yeah, I've held a tarantula before.
I love those tarantulas.
They're pretty cool, and then they find a little one. The two female scientists who go out looking for the solifuge, they do find a tarantula. They do the typical Monster Quest thing as well, where they put out some camera traps, and they put it like a pig's foot to hope the solifuge will bite it, and like some cats come out and grab it. It's just like domesticated cats. Pretty funny.
Yeah. They didn't find much. They didn't find much. Those scientists. And then Rick had some. In my notes, I just said tech porn on caps. He had a probe camera. This fancy camera that went down into the tarantula holes.
Oh, yeah, they did do that, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know if that helped anything, but they did do it.
I kind of was a little upset because they destroyed all these poor spiders' homes. Like they
three tore different up ones, there. Right? For like no reason.
And I was
the tarantula did shoot his hairs out and hurt the one creationist dude. So
he was like, the hairs. Yeah, and then Rick eats grilled spider at one point.
Oh yeah, he didn't like doing that. The guy was really nice. The one guy was like a leader in the group, like sent him out. It's like, oh yeah, my dad and I, we used to go hunting out here all the time, and we'd eat tarantulas as a snack while we were looking for a bigger game. And he's like, here, man, take one. And he's like, oh, fuck. He had to do it.
He did not want to do that. No. I'm interested to see. I've heard from people that tarantula, like fried tarantula, tastes like crab. So I'm interested. Maybe I should have a
tarantula. I just ate a bunch of crabs, and they were delicious.
I love crab. Crab's so good.
I'll cook you some when you come up here, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's very nice of you. The snacks. So I'm looking at species. Fried tarantula costs about 8 cents in Cambodia.
So that's not bad. So yeah, this little thing with the creationist guy we mentioned, because why Trey would creationists be interested in these cryptids, like a giant spider? What's the link there? Like, why this episode's largely happening not just because these colonial stories of people seeing big spiders, but because this guy wants to find big spiders.
Yeah, William Givens is the creationist guy, and I took his quote here. He says, "Back in the old days of colonial Africa, explorers, big game hunters." From time to time, they would encounter strange animals, including giant spiders, and they often don't report their observations for fear of being ridiculed. That is an interesting quote, because if you know about Givens, you know what he's talking about when he means strange creatures. He means dinosaurs. He believes in those dinosaurs. And then also the whole like kind of conspiracy thing, like that the explorers and big game hunters they saw these things and they didn't report them because Big Science was going to make fun of them. And so it goes into the young earth creationist thing that prehistoric animals are still like that. The earth is 5,000, whatever, however thousand years old. And 6,000 in dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals are still alive in the remote regions of the world. And that proves their religion is real. Like if they found a dinosaur, that would prove evolution wrong. And Christianity, young earth creationism would be right. So presumably, Gibbons believes that there were 5-foot-long spiders on the Ark, which is a terrifying thing that I wish the Ark encounter would depict, but I think it's too crazy for, even for them, you know?
Noah's like, are you sure about this one, God? Can we let these ones go with the unicorns?
with the unicorns and the dragons. I guess the dinosaurs are dragons to them. The Ark encounter needs to get on that shit to have like a giant spider on the wall.
That'd be badass.
That's the thing. That's the funny thing is that even among creationists, some of them believe other creationists are crazy. You know, like that Ken Ham isn't as crazy as William Gibbons, and William Gibbons isn't as crazy as Kent Hovind and that kind of thing. Like there's even a degree of craziness among creationists.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, there's like some creationists that like the, what was the thing when dinosaur eggs were discovered, they said that like they were laid in like a line because the dinosaur was running from the waters of the flood. So it was like lightening the load.
And that's so awesome.
The eggs are being laid in a direct line.
What a beautiful theory.
Isn't he talks that there's he's in a documentary. He's in like a 90s like show saying that and without any irony or anything. So crazy.
So I guess from the evidence of the show, they didn't really find the thing.
No.
And you and I think that probably the actual physical limitations of spider body types mean that there are not spiders as large. And there haven't been since the oxygen levels were this way. So, like, since this current ice age that we're in began, spiders have not been able to live this to that size, right?
I think even since like the Mesozoic or something
millions of years ago. But
I have to see what the oxygen levels were like in like the Eocene and stuff like that. But I think it's been a while because I guess
what do you think about ants. What do you think about this video though, Trey? Does that change your mind?
Oh yeah, you see, you have a video here. Yeah. I'm gonna click on this.
Start at like 38. Like, if you look over in the right between those two trees, is that compelling evidence to you?
I like the mute. This is some spooky music in here.
Make sure you start at like 38 because it goes on forever.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I literally do not see anything. Wait, I think it's almost at it. I see where the most replayed part of the video is, and I haven't reached there yet. Let's see.
It's on the right side between those trees.
Holy shit. It's a blurry blob.
Yeah.
It freezes completely. It freezes completely, almost like it's like a like an something being animated, and the animator didn't want to animate it the whole time.
Or it's just anything evidence? At all. Yeah, so this is the
enhanced
most,
version?
Yeah, this is the enhanced and most cited video by proponents of this creature. It has about 100,000 plus views, and if you go onto the cryptid parts of the internet, you'll see this video posted often, and it is about a minute long video. You can't tell where this is in the world. There's a pool of water, and then there's two trees, and it looks like the little hill it's on goes down. There's a black part, and you see something possibly white grayish of unknown size and unknown body type move very slightly into the right, and this thing that you can't really make out as having form is said to be this giant spider. So I don't know why people say that or why people show that as evidence, but we should bring it up because that's the best evidence that we have apparently. So yeah,
there's also that, for yourself. There's also that picture of a spider on a house. It's like a giant, huge spider. You know what I'm talking about.
This is a Jabu Fufi is the name of the cryptid.
Jabu Fufi. Fufi. Yeah. The thing with these giant spiders, and again with like a lot, because some cryptids are just giant versions of known stuff. Like the biggest spider is 12 inches across, maybe not even that, 10 and a half, something like that, like its arm span. And these people are claiming that these are like 5 feet across, 4 feet across. And like, that's an increase of like 10 times or whatever, like five times.
Yeah. It's a lot bigger, right?
It's a lot bigger. And it's like going, okay, we have humans that are like 7 feet. Like there's some humans that are 7-8 feet tall or whatever, crazy rare examples, but you're not going to get like a human that's like 30 feet tall, right? Like, or 40 feet tall. I guess you're a creationist.
But you know, oh yeah, they believe in giants too. So
you know, like, unless you're a crazy person, there really is no reason to believe that like you're gonna find a human that's just that wildly outside the norm, you know? Like outside so much of a outlier in the standard. I don't know. It's weird. Like it's reasonable to suggest that there are spiders that might be, I don't know, like double the size of the largest one at best, but like to say that like something's like five times bigger than the largest known is a little, I don't know. It's a big claim.
Yeah. At double, I'd say, man, I don't think so, but I mean, you know, maybe, you know, but you know, three times, four times, five times. It's like, what are we talking about here, man? Like, it's just ridiculous. So,
right.
Yeah. I think it's a no on giant spiders. And I don't think Monster Quest, I think Monster Quest actually admitted in the episode they don't exist. When they brought up the oxygen problem at all. And I don't think a creationist is probably going to be the guy who finds one. That's it.
I just think it's funny that there are some creationists that believe that there are giant spiders. That never dawned on me until now.
If you find something in the fossil record that everyone says is extinct, and you can show that it's still there, maybe that means that the world is younger than they think. That's their belief. I don't really think that that's what we would believe about that. But for some reason, they think that's a gotcha. So I don't know.
I need to make a list of like creationist claims that all together, you know, like that Noah held a giant spider on the ark. Maybe that's why. Oh my gosh. It dawned on me that the Ark Encounter doesn't depict the insects. It just has them in these tiny boxes, you know, having these terrariums. Maybe they don't want to show the giant spider. They're embarrassed.
Or maybe it's just like, it's too scary, man.
It's too scary. I think it's funny that on a certain level, some creationists are embarrassed of their own beliefs, you know? There's some evidence to show that some creationists kind of know that their beliefs are crazy and kind of hide it.
Well, yeah. You know, you gotta, if you're gonna go with the infallible book, then you gotta go with it. So they're just like, ah, fuck, already committed.
It's too late. I put all my eggs in one basket, you know. Yeah. So the giant spiders, we don't really believe giant spiders. We don't believe Alexander the Great's tomb has been discovered. And that elf, do we believe in that elf? I kind of believe in the elf.
Yeah, the elf's for sure real. I mean, the president said it's real, so you can trust him.
Yeah.
And what we do believe is that the show has several thousand listeners, but we only have 25 reviews on iTunes. So people should go and leave us a positive review.
Leave us some new people.
Yeah, and if you really like the show, you can back us on Patreon where you can get some exclusive content we made. We did like an hour and a half long video where we watched Road del Dorado.
Yeah.
And we've done a few other extra episodes. There's a couple extra hours of content there. Plus, you can just support us because, you know, we put like 5 hours into the show every time we make one. So
do you still want to do the Prince of Egypt thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely.
All right.
It's just, you know, got to do it. I have Comic-Con this weekend. So if you're on the Northwest, the biggest Comic-Con of the Northwest is happening this weekend, and I will be there. If any fans want to come say hi, I will be debuting my new series, Puck the Artist, officially at this Comic-Con. And, of course, I'll have After the Gold Rush in Clovis at my booth as well. So.
Awesome. That's great news. I hear that you had good news about Puck the Artist, right?
Yeah. So.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go... Oh yeah, say what you're sorry. Say what you're
doing. Oh me, I'm working on a video. It'll be out this month. There was some there's some stuff that happened, so you know.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. But now I'm gonna make videos. It'll be fun.
Awesome. All right. I love you, buddy. Good luck to Kiwi. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to go eat food because I'm starving.
Yeah. See you, man. See you. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Said.